them clarify, to listen, and support them in their own self-discovery process. A coach cultivates empowerment and hope in the heart of a creator, Ted pointed out. For the most part, a coach is forward and future-focused, supporting a creator to learn from the past and from current realities. From time to time, a good coach will consciously assume the role of constructive challenger. Ultimately, a coach helps a creator take ownership and assume personal power so he or she can respond consciously and purposefully to life's circumstances. With the help of a coach, a creator can stay centered in the creator orientation. Staying centered allows you to become much more effective in the outer world, since you can focus on your envisioned outcomes and choose your responses to whatever comes up, whether it is easy or challenging. It really sounds too good to be true, I said. As we've said, Sophia responded, Ted isn't all sweetness and light. Even in this way of being, we can feel the weight of circumstances and lose sight of what's most important to us. Those are the times when we most need a coach. We all face problems and challenges that test our strength, but as we face and find our way through them, we grow in fortitude, wisdom, and compassion, and these gifts we can share with others. Tough times are the fire in which our creator character is made strong and whole. I looked at Sophia, then over at Ted, then at Ted's triangle in the sand. I felt almost lightheaded as I considered the possibility of actually living this way. What would my life look like, centered in a position of empowerment, with the support of great coaches to help me understand and respond creatively to my challengers? I looked out at the sea, and then up the shore toward the bench where Ted and I had met. Far out on the water, the little sailboat had made its way up the coast. The seagulls, the surfers, and the sunbathers continued up and down the beach, while the crashing of the waves surrounded us. I sure would prefer to live my life as a creator. I'm tired of wallowing in the DDT. It looks so easy on paper, or on the sand. But I have so many years of practice and habit living out the dreaded drama triangle. I know all three of those roles forward and backward. How do I make the shift from DDT to Ted?
Said Ted. That's an important question, David. Let's explore how shift happens.
Chapter 9. Shift Happens.
Maybe you've heard this before, remarked Ted. You're not a human being seeking a spiritual existence. You're a spiritual being having a human experience. It's true. All human beings are spiritual beings, but most sleepwalk through their days. They are unaware of the reality that they have a greater capacity for choice than they know. The vicious cycle created by the victim orientation and the dreaded drama triangle pulls people into the darkest depths of the human experience and breeds hopelessness. They long for a magical someone or something to race to their rescue. But no matter how much tough luck the human experience dishes out, the creator orientation and the empowerment dynamic provide a larger perspective. This is what I mean about your taking on a spiritual perspective. Instead of a vicious cycle of reacting, this perspective offers a virtuous cycle of growth and development to anyone who adopts it. Think of it this way, David. Your life is a kind of learning laboratory where you're constantly experimenting with your own higher knowing, always increasing your capacity to design your life and to choose your response to what happens to you. Human beings must create. It's hardwired. The reality is this. You cannot not create. The question is, are you creating consciously or sleepwalking through your life, simply reacting to what comes at you? While you may not directly cause everything that happens to you, you do have the capacity to choose your response to circumstances, and you have a great deal more responsibility for what appears in your life than you might want to admit. One of the biggest challenges is waking up to this reality, making the shift happen on a daily basis, and working to stay awake.
That reminds me of Viktor Frankl, Sophia said. He was a psychologist who was imprisoned in Nazi death camps during World War II. He lived through unspeakable hardships and could easily have qualified as a victim. During that time, though, Viktor Frankl had a mind-blowing revelation. I have a quote from him written in my journal here. Everything can be taken from a person, but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. To me, that's quite a creator statement.
I looked out at the ocean. I have to say, all this feels a little overwhelming. It's a lot to take in and to take on. Sophia replied,
I know, David. When Ted and I first had this conversation, I felt the strangest mixture of excitement and fear. Right now you're setting a new course. It's going to affect the rest of your life, so take it easy. Take it a day at a time. The journey starts with the fundamental choice to live from the creator orientation.
Sophia's description fit perfectly. In the pit of my stomach, a weird cocktail of emotions was shaking itself up.
Try using your own dynamic tension, those mixed emotions, by consciously choosing to live as a creator, she continued. Each day, take a look at your current reality. When and where do the old habits of the victim orientation show up? Likewise, what's it like when you're in alignment with the creator orientation? Pay attention to these new choices and behaviors and celebrate them. Keep on taking the baby steps that will transform the reactivity of the DDT and victimhood into your new way of being.
You make it sound easy, I said.
As I said before, it's simple, but not always easy, Sophia said. It's important to develop the habit of noticing the choices you are making. I spend about 20 minutes each morning doing this. I sit quietly and say a little prayer of gratitude for my awakening. Then, I invite guidance to support my living more fully as a creator. I end by affirming that I choose to live this way, cultivating TED relationships that offer mutual support. I spend a few minutes remembering how I did the day before and moving toward creator choices. Then I decide on 3 baby step actions I will take that day. They're usually things like having a particular conversation, or reading an article, or making an appointment. It's amazing how those baby steps give momentum and purpose to my day. There are 2 important criteria for defining a baby step. First, it is something that is doable, something I can really take action on. The second is that it is 100% mine to do. That second one really makes me stop sometimes because it forces me to clarify my own responsibility and the fact that I can't make someone else take a step for me. Doable and 100% mine to do. Remember these principles as you choose your own baby steps.
In the end, David, we're talking about choice, Ted pointed out. On the one hand, it is about choosing what you feel called to create and the steps you take in the process of living into your vision. On the other hand, you also choose your response to what shows up in your life, either as a conscious response or an unconscious reaction. When you simply react, it means you are choosing the way of the victim. If, on the other hand, you stay mindful of current reality and determine how best to respond, you've entered the empowerment dynamic. Sophia added,
Unfortunately, before they can begin to make better choices, most people have to hit bottom in the victim orientation and the dynamics of the DDT. Some people say that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for different results. As that way of being gets more painful, the possibility of breaking through to the creator orientation and TED opens up. Then, just as it is happening with you, a person reaches that sacred and bittersweet place called the choice point.
But what do you mean by choice point? I asked. Ted's eyes sparkled. As you go through your daily experience, at every point in time you are faced with the choice about which orientation and dynamic you want to live within and which role you're going to play. The choice point is that moment in which you can consciously make a shift happen. The main way you make the shift is by choosing a more empowered role to play. Consider the roles within the DDT and TED relationship triangles. You can shift roles to shift orientations. Ted reached out with his walking stick and drew a vertical line in the sand. At the top, he scratched CR, and at the bottom, he wrote the letter V. Victim to Creator.
There are 2 ways to look at the shift between roles, Ted said. First, you can change the way you see yourself. That very choice begins to make the shift happen. Second, you can change the way you view the people, conditions, and circumstances in your life. This also creates a shift. You might call one shift intrapersonal, meaning within yourself. This is where you shift how you meet your life experience. The other shift is interpersonal, which involves how you interact with others. This means being conscious of the roles you play in relating to and with others. As you focus on making shift happen, there's one reality that you must always keep in mind. You can only change yourself. You cannot make shift happen for others. However, as you grow more skilled at taking on the roles of creator, challenger, and coach, others may make their own choices to change. But you cannot make it your goal to change them. You can only change yourself.
You've already made the most important shift, David, Sophia said. But let me ask you this. When you find yourself lapsing into the victim role from time to time, how do you think you could make the shift to creator?
I thought over all that Ted and Sophia had told me about creator orientation. Well, I said, I could remember that a creator stays focused on a desired outcome, while a victim is focused on problems. I guess the first thing I'd have to do would be to describe what I really want.
Hey, you're a pretty quick study. Sophia gave me a big grin. That's the key to making the shift happen. You stop and ask yourself, what do I really want here? If I could have or do or be anything my heart desired right now, what would that look like? Who and how do I choose to be in this situation? Just asking the question shifts your focus toward what you want to create. And there's one other very important thing to consider. When you're asking what you want, make sure that whatever it is, it's intended for the highest good and won't bring harm to anyone or anything.
Okay, I said. But isn't being a creator about manifesting whatever you want?
Well, yes and no, Sophia smiled. Yes, because it is about creating what you want to bring into your life. But no, a creator doesn't focus only on what he or she wants without considering its impacts on others. Creating in that way would be ego-driven. Insisting on that kind of creating can easily set you up for slipping into the persecutor role, losing touch with the creator stance.
Ted explained, asking yourself what you want, rather than focusing on what you don't want, is the way of making shift happen between both the victim and creator orientations and victim and creator roles. It is choosing what you want to create, keeping in mind what Sophia just said, and it is choosing your response to your current realities. That is the intrapersonal shift. Standing in the position of creator carries with it a great deal of responsibility, including how you respond to others, which is the interpersonal shift. Most of humanity is still sleepwalking through life in the victim orientation. You can help nudge people awake, depending on how you interact with them, but you cannot force them to make any of the shifts we were talking about. Sophia interjected.
I've learned that one the hard way, Ted. I finally figured out that the fastest way of getting someone to see me as a persecutor is for me to tell them that they are just being a victim.
Ted smiled and nodded in agreement. First and foremost, a creator extends compassion to others. You can do this by seeing people as being creators, whether they know it or not, and whether they're acting like it or not. As you make this shift in the way you see and interact with others, you can consciously step into one of the other Ted roles. You become a co-creator by serving as either a challenger or a coach, depending on the situation. Persecutor to challenger. Ted placed a stick just below the CR and drew a diagonal line that ended just to the left of the V. He wrote P at the top and CH at the bottom. He said, "This is one of the most powerful shifts of all, from persecutor to challenger. Most persecutors show up in your life as deconstructive challengers. You'd rather avoid them. But when you're able to shift your view of persecuting people, conditions, or circumstances, the strangest thing happens. Their actions have an entirely different impact on you. The empowering impact of the challenger. Discovering this opens up a whole new world of possibility. You may wake up to a greater understanding of your anger, for one thing. Anger is one of the most powerful and feared of human emotions. In the DDT, anger correlates with fear. It's the central emotion of the persecutor. With Ted, though, anger can be a powerful motivating force. Used constructively, it helps you to move toward whatever you're passionate about."
"I'm not sure what you mean," I said.
"Behind every experience of anger lies something you care about. Otherwise, you wouldn't feel the anger, explained Ted. Many great contributions arose as empowered responses to anger. Gandhi, for example, felt anger about the injustice of the British rule over India. It fueled his determination to lead a peaceful resistance movement that led India's people to win their independence. Another possibility presented by the empowerment dynamic is forgiveness. You cannot make the shift from persecutor to challenger without some measure of forgiveness, of both yourself and others. Someone once said that forgiveness is giving up the hope of ever having a better past. There's nothing you can do to change the past, but you can choose how you think about what has already happened in your life. You then apply the learning from that experience to the process of creating what you care about. Anger and forgiveness were so important in my learning from and letting go of my relationship with Dan, Sophia said. At one point, I came across a quote from the writer and philosopher Henry Nguyen, who said, "Forgiveness changes the way we remember. It converts the curse into a blessing." Once I surrendered to the fact that I could not change what had already happened between Dan and me, I was able to redirect my energy to focus on what I wanted to create in my life. Now I can honestly say I'm grateful for our divorce, painful as it was, because of what I've learned and overcome by dealing with it.
When problems and obstacles arise, and they always do, they're part of the creating process, said Ted. Welcome them as teachers that are challenging you to grow. In this way, you transform your situation into an opportunity for action, or at least for learning, and the gift of the challenger is yours. The pain received from the persecutor then magically becomes the bittersweet fruit of deepening knowledge, of learning from your experience. I thought about how anger and forgiveness had been darting around inside me in various ways in response to Dad's passing, the infertility, and the divorce. It felt like sifting through the rubble of what seemed to be the ruins of my life. So how do I begin to do that? I asked.
There's an exercise you can use, Sophia offered. First, make a list of the people, conditions, or circumstances you have thought of as persecutors. For each one of them, list at least 7 ways they have been a gift or a teacher to you. How have they challenged you to learn and grow?
I groaned. With some things, that's easier said than done.
Maybe so, Sophia said. But I think you'll be surprised at what you uncover. The trick is to keep asking yourself questions. What is the lesson this person or situation is bringing into my life? How and what can I learn from this? What's the gift hidden in this situation, no matter how difficult it appears? Once you've written down the challenger's lessons and gifts, spend some time going a little deeper. I suggest journaling at that point. As things become clearer, ask yourself more questions. What insights have I gained from this experience? Is this lesson complete for now? If it is, am I fully ready to forgive, let go, and move forward in my life? By making this list and asking these questions, you can transform all your persecutors into challengers.
David, said Ted, there's another aspect of making the shift from persecutor to challenger that can be even trickier than what Sophia's describing.
What could be trickier than that? I blurted.
What we've been talking about so far is the intrapersonal shift, how you choose to respond to a persecutor in your life. The trickier shift is the interpersonal one, when you find yourself in the role of persecutor, or if someone perceives you as one. Shifting yourself from persecutor to challenger takes tremendous conscious focus and effort, and no small measure of humility. You can often tell if someone is perceiving you as a persecutor by the way he reacts to what you say or do. If he starts getting defensive, that's a clue that you are showing up for him in the persecutor role.
I thought back to my experience with my ex-wife as our marriage was crumbling. There were so many times when she reacted defensively to what I said or did. There could be no doubt that I had repeatedly fallen into the persecutor role.
Ted continued, "When you notice how the other person is reacting to you, the first thing to do is to clarify your intention. What are you really doing? If your intention is to look good, to be right, to be one up, or to instill fear, then you must stop in your tracks. Gather yourself and apologize for your actions or words.
Then, the hardest part is to let go of the whole thing. On the other hand, if you are clear that your intention is to challenge the other person to learn or to develop his capacity as a creator, the best thing to do is to ask for a do-over. Begin by acknowledging that your behavior did not come across as you had intended, and apologize. This communication closes the gap between your intention and the negative impact of your previous approach. When you're making the interpersonal shift from persecutor to challenger, it's important to acknowledge the other person's worth, his power, and his responsibility for making his own choices and decisions. Then you can invite him to consider your point of view. The challenge is to adopt a take-it-or-leave-it stance about whatever you share or suggest. The decision to take your advice is his to make. Everyone creates his or her own life experience and has a set of personal lessons to learn. The choices people make will create the outcomes they reap.
I call it the Challenger Challenge, Sophia said, because it is the most difficult TED role to master. Becoming a conscious and constructive challenger takes a lot of time to develop.
Sophia then took a step toward me.
David, if your former wife were standing here with us, what could you say to her to make the shift from persecutor to challenger?
A flock of pelicans soared along the edge of the bluff and down the beach. As I thought about what I might say, I felt my heart loosen, and with that, a flood of tears. I choked out a few words. I'd say I was sorry for the way I blamed and verbally attacked her. I'd tell her I knew she was going through a difficult time too, and I'd want her to know that I believe she was doing the best she could, in her own way.
Excellent, Sophia said. Now what would you say your intention was?
Strange, I said. My intention was to connect with her, to bridge the distance between us, but the things I did actually drove us further apart. I'd tell her that. I'd tell her how I want to learn and grow through this process, even though it's painful, and that I want to keep communicating wherever it leads us. Then I'd ask if she was willing to talk it over.
Good start, Sophia said. What would you do if she said no to talking?
Well, instead of feeling rejected and reacting as a victim, I'd like to believe that if I was really speaking in the framework of TED, I'd accept that as her choice. I'd just leave her with an open invitation to talk when and if she was ready.
And that, my dear, is the way of a creator, Sophia grinned. And while it may be easier said than done, that's the way it is said, and that's the way it is done. It is possible.
Ted, who had been listening attentively, now chimed in. I must say, it's fun to see you two working together. Keep in mind, too, that a creator is capable of consciously assuming either the role of challenger or the role of coach. Rescuer to coach. Ted drew a third line in the sand. At the top end of this line, he wrote R, and at the bottom, CO. He then turned to me and said,
One of the biggest temptations of people who want to help others, to make a contribution in the world, is to fall into the victim orientation role of rescuer. It's one thing to lend a helping hand when someone has fallen, but it's quite another to assume you have to walk on his or her behalf. A rescuer sees the other person as a needy and powerless victim. Rescuers breed dependence. They thrive on the need to be needed by a victim. A coach, on the other hand, remembers that other people are creative, resourceful whole beings, capable of creating their heart's desires. Again, whether they know it or not, and whether they act like it or not. A coach assumes others are responsible for their life choices and experiences. A rescuer is attached to the outcomes and sees it as his responsibility to fix the victim. But a coach is not attached to any particular outcome. Rather, the coach serves and supports a creator in manifesting his or her desired outcomes. On the intrapersonal level, if you perceive that someone is trying to be a rescuer or to fix you or your situation, the way to make the shift happen is to thank them for their concern and to own your responsibility as a creator. You can then invite them to help you as a coach if it feels right. I asked, So what can I do when I want to help someone without becoming a rescuer myself? It's so easy for me to take on that role.
Be curious. Ask questions, answered Sophia. A coach's major contribution is in the questions he asks.
Rescuers have a tendency to tell others what they should do, giving advice or instruction. Coaches make occasional suggestions, but without concerning themselves with whether other people follow their recommendations. Great coaches ask great questions that help creators gain clarity about what they want. Questions also help creators accurately assess their current reality, decide what needs to be done, and commit to the actions that support them in moving toward fulfilling their dreams.
When we were exploring the nature of the victim yesterday, you might remember that every victim has a dream that somehow has been denied or thwarted, said Ted.
One of the most powerful and helpful ways to shift from rescuer to coach is to ask the other person what it is that she wants, Sophia added. Help her identify that dream that has been denied or thwarted. What do you really want here? If you could have or do or be anything your heart desired right now, what would that look like? Who and how do you choose to be or to respond in this situation? These are all questions that help a person shift into her own creator orientation. Another great way to contribute is to help someone see the gifts and lessons a persecutor has made available to them, Sophia continued. You can do that by asking her the same sort of questions I raised a minute ago when you are working to make your own shift from the persecutor to the challenger role. You might ask, what is the lesson this person or situation is bringing into your life? How and what can you learn from this? What's the gift hidden in this situation, no matter how difficult it appears?
The sun was beginning its slow descent toward the horizon. Our shadows encircled Ted's sand drawings, which now looked something like an asterisk. As I studied the crossroads in the sand, I felt Ted's hand on my shoulder.
There you have it, David. All your choices are right here at your feet. Here you can see all the roles of the victim orientation, with its dreaded drama triangle, as well as the creator orientation and the empowerment dynamic. My challenge to you, my friend, is to stay awake to the choices you make every day and to the relationships you cultivate.
Then Ted pulled something from a shirt pocket, a small pendant of some sort, strung on a brown twine. As Ted held it out, I saw that it was in the shape of a tiny sand dollar.
This is for you, David. It's to remind you of all you now know. In this way, it offers a source of protection. See the center? It's an asterisk, like the one in the sand. A symbol of the choice you always have before you. Victim or creator?
Ted looked at me for a long moment before reaching over my head and placing the amulet around my neck.
Chapter 10. A Fond Farewell. Stunned, I looked down at the pendant. In the late afternoon light, the small reminder glowed slightly against my shirt. Just then, Sophia pulled a similar pendant from her sweatshirt and held it up for me to see. My heart felt suddenly larger, as if it were expanding to contain the moment. The two of them had given me so much. Their wisdom, their experience, their close attention. They had come near when everyone and everything else in my life seemed to have fallen away. Ted and Sophia had listened and offered a new perspective. Most of all, they had helped point a way forward for my life when I had felt so stuck. They had laughed with me and cared. I looked up at the sky. Such friends. Such sky. Something else inside let go just then. Like a prisoner stepping into the light of freedom, I let the tears flow.
Emotions are a measure of how important something is to you, David, said Ted. I'm happy to welcome your tears of release. I trust you'll take what you've learned these past 2 days and continue growing in that new knowledge. You seem to have found what you were searching for when you came to the beach.
I found more than I can say. Much more.
My mind was whirling, imagining all the ways that I could begin applying Ted in my life. The sunshine felt warmer. The sounds of the shore were filled with meaning. Sacred moments passed. I stammered.
I can already think of so many people and places where Ted can make things better. Not only in my own life, but for other people too. I want to practice what I've learned here with my associates at work. I want to share it with these newlyweds I know and my sister's family. In fact, everybody's family.
Boy, I wish I had known about this way of being while I was growing up.
I'll bet young people would really appreciate Ted's help. There are so many areas this could apply to. The possibilities are endless.
Ted laughed. Hang on, David. Slow down a bit. It's true. There's not a single aspect of the human experience to which Ted, the empowerment dynamic, does not apply. Take it a step at a time, and one aspect of your life at a time. Eventually, you will find that much of your life has been influenced by Ted. But those explorations must wait for another day. The sun will be going down soon, and it's time to call it a day.
David,
Sophia said,
I'd love to stay in touch and to be of support in whatever ways I can. As a friend, as a coach, and maybe from time to time as a challenger. Your personal growth will be my reward. It's no accident that Ted brought us together. We've been down similar paths, and I know there are things we can learn from each other.
That would be great, Sophia. Thanks, I said.
I saw that Ted had closed his eyes. Sophia did the same, so I followed suit.
Let's be silent for a moment, said Ted. I want to express my gratitude for our meeting, and for this work and way of being that has been entrusted to us. Let the sounds outside wash over us.
And so I did. I gave thanks for all that had happened, for my new connections, and the new sense of hope that was now coursing through me. I drank in the sounds of the waves, breathed in the smell of the ocean, and let the warmth of the day sink in. After a few minutes, someone gave my hand a squeeze, and I opened my eyes. It was Ted. He had taken both my hand and Sophia's. He looked deeply at her, and then at me. I felt a little funny then, as if Ted were looking into and beyond me. It reminded me of the way my dad looked at me when I graduated from college. I had known then that he saw exactly what I was made of, that he loved me for all that I was, and even for all that I wasn't. I smiled back.
Until next time.
Ted gave us both a hug, such a warm soul. Felt like my heart might bubble over. Sophia turned, grabbed my hands, and gave me an exuberant squeeze as if she were a long-lost sister returning home. I closed my eyes and relaxed into the moment. What a blessing to feel this way, I thought to myself. After a long minute, I opened my eyes and turned to Ted. And Ted wasn't there. He was sauntering down the shore, his walking stick making little marks in the sand. They looked like little periods, punctuating the end of his two-day conversation. He turned back to us, grinned, and waved goodbye. Sophia laughed. He has a way of doing that. One thing I can predict, this won't be the last time you see Ted. She reached out and touched my pendant. I liked having it there, resting over my heart. We stood for a few minutes, looking out at the waves together, and then Sophia said, Well, time to head home. We said our goodbyes. As Sophia was leaving, she called out over her shoulder, I'll email you after dinner. Walking up the beach toward the car, I took my time. There was the bluff and the path where Ted and I had made our way down here both yesterday and today. The sun had dipped lower now, and the clouds had taken on a pink glow. Scanning the top of the bluff, I could just make out the bench where I had first come to sit and think and write in my journal. How different I felt now. Thank you, Ted, for introducing me to Ted, the empowerment dynamic, I said aloud, smiling. Thank you very much.
A note from the author. Writers write what they most need to learn. At least this writer does. During the writing of this book, I was presented with many opportunities to cast off victimhood, reconsidering and applying TED, the empowerment dynamic, in new and exciting ways. My personal and professional life constantly urges me to observe and understand the human experience more deeply. As a teacher, facilitator, coach, and consultant, my passion has long been to help improve people's individual and collective capacity for living and working together. As I live out this passion, I've come to realize that the most fundamental relationship, the one at the heart of all others, is the relationship to ourselves and our life experience. Each day, I awaken to a range of choices that will shape my reality and my life.
Some days are better than others, like the weather outside my window. Some mornings bring sun and clarity. Others seem dusted with a gray haze. Like Sophia, I'm still living my way into what it means to be rooted in the creator orientation. So I try to stay alert, ready to welcome the challengers and coaches that make life a rich learning experience. This little book is part autobiography and part fiction. Which parts are which is, in the end, of no real consequence. The really important questions are these. Where do you see yourself in the story? What kinds of choices are you making? And what is the baby step that will make a shift happen in your life today? May we individually live into our own answers while seeing all those around us as the creators they actually are. By offering our gifts to others as coaches and constructive challengers, we can create a world that works for all of us. For ultimately, that is the true power of TED. Appendix: A Synopsis of the Power of TED, the Empowerment Dynamic. This section provides an overview of the frameworks and key concepts from the Power of TED in the same order in which they appear in the fable. The dreaded drama triangle, DDT, victim, persecutor, rescuer. Based on Stephen Cartman's original drama triangle, the DDT involves three intertwined roles. 1. Victim. The central figure in the DDT, a victim, is one who feels powerless and has experienced some loss, thwarted desire, or aspiration, and/or the psychic death of a dream. An important distinction is made between victimhood, which is a situation in which one is victimized to some degree, and victimhood, which is a self-identity and poor me life stance. 2. Persecutor. The persecutor serves as the cause of the victim's perceived powerlessness, reinforcing the victim's poor me identity. The persecutor may be a person, condition, such as health condition, or a circumstance, a natural disaster, for example. When the persecutor is a person, he or she is symbiotically linked to the victim and seeks to dominate, either overtly or covertly, and maintain a one-up position through a variety of assertive and/or manipulative means. Often a persecutor's behavior is driven by his own fear of becoming or re-becoming a victim. Fear of losing control can also be a factor. 3. Rescuer. The rescuer is any person or activity, such as an addiction, that serves to help a victim relieve the pain of victimhood. As an activity, the rescuer helps the victim numb out. Despite having helpful intentions, the rescuer as a person reinforces the victim's poor me by adopting a poor you attitude, which serves to increase the victim's sense of powerlessness. This renders the victim dependent upon the rescuer for a sense of safety, a bond forged by the victim's shame for needing to be rescued and cemented by the rescuer's own fear of abandonment or loss of purpose. FISBE. This serves as the basis of the mental model that underpins the two orientations. It is an acronym for the three elements of the model. Where people put their focus engages in them an emotional inner state, which then drives their behavior. The two primary mental models, victim and creator, are referred to as orientations, because what we focus on, i.e. orient on, has a great deal to do with what manifests in our experience. Victim orientation. It is in this orientation that the DDT thrives. In this way of being, one's focus is on the problem or problems that dominate one's life. When a problem occurs, it engages an inner state of anxiety, which in turn causes one to react. There are three basic forms of reacting: fight, flight, or freeze. The DDT is based on fear, avoidance of feelings, loss, pain, reality, and/or aggressive reactivity. Much of humanity sleepwalks through life, unwittingly entangled in the DDT and the victim orientation in which it takes place. While the victim orientation has served a vital evolutionary purpose by helping humanity survive by reacting to threats in a hostile world, it has now outlived its usefulness as our default orientation. Creator orientation. The alternative to the victim orientation,
This is the way of being in which the empowerment dynamic is cultivated. The FISB here is much different. A creator consciously focuses on a vision or outcome, that which she chooses to create in her life. As she focuses on what she wants to manifest, a creator taps into an inner state of passion, which propels her to take a baby step. Each small movement is either an advancement toward the vision or a clarification of the final form of the desired outcome. A creator still faces and solves problems, but she does so in the course of creating the outcomes, rather than merely reacting to them. AIR. This acronym highlights the three key differences between the victim and the creator orientation. The first is where you place your attention, on what's wanted instead of what's not wanted. The second is what you hold as your intention, manifesting outcomes, not just ridding yourself of problems. The third is result, satisfying and sustainable, not temporary and reactive. The acronym AIR also serves to reinforce the reality that a very different experience and environment, hence AIR, is generated by each of the two orientations. Harnessing dynamic tension. Based on the work of Robert Fritz, The Path of Least Resistance, dynamic tension is a way of planning for and taking action and creating outcomes. We begin by identifying and describing the vision or outcome we desire to create. The next step is to carefully and completely assess our current reality as it relates to the envisioned outcome. There are two aspects of the current situation that we identify. The first aspects are those things that are happening or exist that support and are helpful in the creation of the outcome. The second aspects are the problems, obstacles, or things that are missing that inhibit our capacity to manifest the vision. By focusing on both the outcome and the current reality, we engage the tension, a creative force, between what we want and where we are. This tension seeks to be resolved. A creator resolves the tension by taking baby steps to move from current reality toward the desired outcome. Each small step brings learning, whether it results in a step back, a step forward, or a quantum leap in the process of creating outcomes. TED, the empowerment dynamic. Creator, challenger, coach. As a result of moving from the victim orientation to the creator orientation, a whole new set of roles and relationship dynamics becomes possible. The empowerment dynamic is made up of the following three roles, each of which serves as an antidote to the toxic roles of the DDT. 1. Creator. This is the central role of TED and is the antidote to the powerless victim. A creator cultivates his capacity to create outcomes by adopting a creator orientation and harnessing dynamic tension. A creator greatly increases his ability to choose a response to life circumstances, even in the harshest of situations, rather than merely reacting to them. Creators seek and form relationships with other creators, co-creators, both to support and to be supported through the other two roles that make up TED. 2. Challenger. Serving as an antidote to a persecutor who provokes a reaction from a victim, a challenger is a catalyst for change, learning, and growth for a creator. A challenger may be conscious and constructive, especially when in a relationship with another creator. Some of the challengers we meet in life are unconscious, a person, condition, or circumstance that comes into our experience uninvited. In either case, a creator is able to embrace the experience of a challenger as a call to action, learning, and growth. 3. Coach. As the antidote to a rescuer who reinforces the powerlessness of a victim, a coach views others as being creative and resourceful. A coach sees each person he relates to as a creator in her own right and seeks to support her in the process of creating outcomes. A coach does this by asking questions that help clarify envisioned outcomes, current realities, and possible baby steps. A coach dares a creator to dream and discern the pathways for manifesting her visions. Shift happens. Making shift happen from the victim to the creator orientation and from the DDT roles to their antidotes in TED
is the pathway for transforming how we experience life and interact in relationships. The shift from victim to creator takes place by focusing on what we want rather than what we don't want, by moving from reacting to choosing outcomes and our responses to life experiences, and by reconnecting to our dreams and desires. Transforming our relationship with persecutors so that we see them as challengers instead calls upon us to discern the learning and growth they spark. To become a conscious challenger in a relationship with others requires clarity of intention, the ability to see others as a creator in his own right, and the wish to provoke and evoke growth and development. The shift from rescuer to coach invites us to see the other as creative and resourceful, and to support him in the creation process by asking questions and facilitating his own clarification of envisioned outcomes, the current realities he faces, and possible baby steps for moving forward. This has been Power of TED, The Empowerment Dynamic, 10th Anniversary Edition, written by David Emerald, narrated by Ryan Sitzberger. Copyright 2016 by David Emerald. Production copyright 2017 by David Emerald.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.